Paul Bauermeister. I'll answer to the name Paul, and come from St. Louis. Up till now, I've been identified in the village as Mary Jo's father. And I wish to announce that I have a separate identity all my own. I am a minister in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and in the AELC at this point. That makes me dual aligned, if you understand that kind of talk. I teach at Seminex. I'm a clinical psychologist and have a practice. And I serve as an assistant at one of the St. Louis parishes, Bethel, if you know the town. That's me, and that's what I do. Let me introduce the real backbone of the family here, Jeanette. She is Mary Jo's mother, also has a separate identity of her own. She runs Seminex. That's basically what she does. She's an administrator at Seminex. She has been at Seminex longer than I have. She had worked at Concordia Seminary for a number of years before the exodus occurred, and was part of that business. At that time, I was guest faculty at Seminex. Have now been on the faculty for 2 years. That's who we are. Just thought you ought to know that before we started. How to survive living in a family. You supply whatever word you wanted between there. Everybody has some experience in living in a family. And that's a big part of what I'm counting on in the way I'm going to approach you today and tomorrow and the day after that, if you stick around that long. I hope to give you a framework that will assist you in reflecting on how one lives in a family. My framework is simple, as I am. There's no magic, no bag of tricks. And my framework is slightly theological, as I am. I'm coming at you in three units. The one today is titled A Family is a Balancing Act, and that's kind of basic and foundational to other things we'll be talking about later on. Tomorrow, we're talking about keeping your act together, and that's about communication within the family. And then on Tuesday, balancing across the gap, and that's about parents and children. I'm considering a fourth unit, but we'll see how it goes before we make any commitment about a fourth unit. As the way I operate best is rather informally. Break in, please. I will not be offended if you disagree with me. I might be a little mad, but I will not be offended. If you don't understand, by all means, ask for clarification. If I can do it, I will. If I can, maybe somebody else can. If you have something to add that you think I've overlooked, or if you have something to add that you think might help somebody understand something better, please add it. I don't want to do all the talking in here. I'm not particularly interested, you probably noticed already, in a smooth, polished performance. That's not the way I operate best. I'm interested mainly in us working together. What good brother Sig gets on his tape is going to be his problem. I think he knows that about me already. I was his teacher some time ago. So let's move on. A family is a balancing act. We're going to start in what I think is a pretty good place to start, where it all started, Genesis 1, verse 26 and 27. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Did you notice the plurals as I was reading that? Let us make man in our image. What kind of meaning would you attach to that? The meaning I get out of it is that God is a group. God is a group, together. And when he says, let us make man in our image, man is to be a group as well. We are made to live with each other. You recall what God finally had to say about Adam before Eve came along was, it is not good for the man to be alone. Adam's aloneness stands out in all of creation like the great sore thumb. And it was something God very quickly did something about. There's an interesting thing to speculate about if you want to dig a little further into Genesis 1. One thing that happens is God has all the animals go past Adam, and Adam looks at each one. Part of what's going on there is Adam is naming the animals. Another part of what's going on is Adam's looking for a partner, and he doesn't find one. And after Adam has looked over all the animals and not found a partner, it is then that Eve is created. Speculate on that for a moment. The conclusion that I come to on that one is, the partner for Adam is God's special gift to him. Or, if you want to put it in slightly different language, family is God's special gift to humans. God is a group. We are created to live in a group. We can push it just a little bit farther if you'll let me. God is a special kind of group. Try this one on for size. God is a family. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. God, when he tries to speak our language so that we can grasp him and understand him, the words that he uses, the language, is family language. Now we'll step out of the clouds and all that God talk, and we'll step down here on earth with me, and I'll ask you, what does it mean to be a family? What's involved in familyness? What is, if you're going to be a philosopher about it, yes, you are still up there, hi. What is the familyness thing? What is the essence of familyness? I got one word in mind. The word is interdependence. Interdependence. And just so that everybody gets really clear on what I don't mean independence. Let me illustrate that with you. Can you put down your stuff for a minute? This would be independence. If she's standing there and I'm standing here, we're together, aren't we? Well, are we? You can't really tell, can you? We're together. We gotta get down here to see you. But we're independent of each other. Now, if we're gonna be dependent, then we have to kind of lean on each other. Can you really get out there and lean a little bit? It's tricky. Try it. Blah.
Better.
No, that's not fair. Now we are getting more and more dependent on each other. If she moves out, you can't have much fun this way. It's really kind of a drag. It's a strain. It's hard to do. There's not much else you can do. You know, I can pat her a little bit. This is dependent. This is one kind of dependent. There's a more standard kind of dependent between men and women. Let's show them that. That's where I am, big and strong. Come on, lean on me, baby. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, I won't fall over. Do it. She's afraid. There, see how big and strong I can be. That's the more standard kind of dependence between men and women. Sometimes it goes the other way. Want to try it the other way? In our house, it goes the other way, too. See, you can't have much fun with dependence or with independence. You know, who needs it, right? What you can have is interdependence, and that looks like this. We put our toes together and lean back. Now, we can be pretty comfortable. She's a little fuzzy. I don't know why.
I have that new sweatshirt on. You buy a new sweatshirt, you have to wash it first.
This is interdependence. We can have some fun with this, can't we? We can fool around. We can do all kinds of things, huh? We could dance. You could, but we really are dependent on each other equally. If she lets go, who goes down?
You.
Yeah. If I let go, who goes down? Right. It took us a little bit of trick to get into this, but once we're into it, we can relax everything except some muscles in our back and our hands. It's fairly comfortable. We could stay this way for a while. It might be boring, but you can do things. You can look at each other, you can wink. Huh? You can do all kinds of things. This is interdependence. This is what a family is. Now, let's get an experimental family up here, and we'll start putting it together, all right? You can sit down. Who wants to be our experimental family? You're going to make me pick, right? All right, there's a good father. I pick him because I hear he's a fisherman. Now we need a mother for our experimental family. Got any ideas?
Well, I don't see any Marilyn Monroe's around.
Well, let's see a mother. There's a mother. Oh, shoot, she says. That's good mother talk.
Thought she wasn't going to be a mother for an hour, and now she has to be a mother anyway.
Okay, let's see if you can put your family together. Let's see if you can get interdependent, can you? Like we did. Try it. They've never done this before. I'm an old hand at it, see? You ever watch a couple newlyweds trying to put interdependence together? It's difficult. It takes a little while. They have to learn how to do it. Let's hope everybody clipped their fingernails this morning. There they are. That's nice. How does it feel? Are you feeling comfortable? A little tension here, a little tension in the knees and in the back, and the rest of you can just kind of let it go, huh? Not so quick. Okay. Observe. They were able to establish a good kind of interdependence. I feel like I ought to be on my knees. Funny feeling in this room. They established a good kind of interdependence. It took them 2 tries to get it, right? Have you ever noticed when newlyweds get married, huh? And what do people say to them? Oh, isn't it wonderful, isn't it grand? And they're going through all of this stuff. And it's not easy. What they're trying to do is establish an interdependence between two people where it wasn't before, or trying to expand on it where it was. Minimal, make it bigger. Okay, get it back together and we'll bring a kid into this act. Who wants to be their first child? Any volunteers? Okay, good. I think he wants to be part of your family. Now, how are we going to add this kid? After they've got it all nicely established, these newlyweds have put it together and it's really functioning, then what happens? Along comes number one. Get him in there. Are you interdependent?
No, sure
am. Okay. Nice. Is it comfortable?
Yeah.
You like being part of this family?
I like this
family. All right. But did you notice what they had to do? I'm going to have sore knees after I've been here. Did you notice what they had to do in order to put it together? They had to take it apart first. They got a nice interdependence. The entire family is interdependent. Nice. That's a good kind of family to have, I think. Can you do it another way? Can you do it without taking it apart first? Try it. You two get hooked up and see if you can add this kid without taking everything apart. Got a plan?
I don't know. Maybe
in here. Anybody ever seen a family like this? Yeah, you have. What's the matter with this family? It's a way to do it. Kid comes in between father and mother. What else is wrong with the family? Kid is in no kind of interdependence. Right. Seen a family like that? Yeah, there are families like that. Not the optimal family structure. Try again. Nice try, though. Exactly what I wanted him to do. I didn't coach him a bit, really. Okay. Hook him in again. See if you can get him in without taking it apart first.
You took it apart. I could stand on your toes, but I don't think you'd like that.
He's got some dependence going. That was beautiful. What does that show? Child is dependent on one parent. It is not a genuine interdependence. He adds only weight to father, right? You see families like that too. Hook up again, I'll hook him on one more way. And then we kind of run the gamut of ways to hook this kid in. Hook him on her back. This is kind of standard, huh? Isn't that a good way to do it? You've seen families like this too, haven't you? There is some interdependence here. Hmm? If kid were to let go, mother would go flying, the whole thing would go flying. So there is family interdependence, but son, how do you feel about your father? Do you see much of him?
Not too much. Still feel his weight, though.
You can feel him fall, but you don't have much of a relationship with him.
No.
Does he ever touch you?
No.
Probably not. Okay. Okay, relax a minute. Let me just stay here, if you will. We're going to build this family a little bigger in just a minute. But did you notice how difficult it is to establish interdependence when you add a new person without taking the thing apart? Maybe there's something to be learned there about what goes on in families when the new baby arrives. Everybody says, oh, isn't it wonderful, isn't it grand? Now you're a family, they say. But what's the family going through? Struggles, difficulties. Things are not all that easy. Things aren't like they were before. What's happened? Change. Huh? Change is occurring. Okay. Get back in that three-way where everybody's in touch with everybody. And we're going to add another one. What do you want for a sister, son?
Oh, I think Dottie would make a good sister.
Come on, Dottie.
My notes.
Now, how are you going to add Dottie, for goodness sakes?
Why don't you grab a little...
Yeah.
This point is with me.
Just hold on, or what?
Okay. There we go.
It involves trust, doesn't it?
Good thought. Nice.
Only I lost contact with her.
I think there are not going to be any more children in this family. It's a nice interdependent unit. I think it's stabilized now. We've got no more problems. Right. Good one. And you have much to do with your sister? You can look at her, but she's... kind of far away, isn't he?
Mm.
How do you think about brother? Ever get to know him?
No.
No. That strange older kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay. Take it apart now and put it back together and see if you can do a better job.
You can grab a hold on that and let me know.
Yeah, I'll do it. Going across.
You got a complicated thing. Is everybody in touch with everybody else?
No, you only have two arms. There are three.
Okay. Improve upon it, can you?
Mm. You two join. And go ahead and I'm going to see if we can get on you.
One on each. One on each, yeah. No, one hand on each.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is everybody in touch with everybody else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is everybody comfortable? These two are going to have one elongated arm. It be recognized, though, as a family wherever you went. Is there a way you can put it all together right here in the middle in some kind of wad?
I'm not touching it.
There it is. Everybody's in touch with everybody else. We have genuine interdependence going. Just to prove it, can you get out?
No, not out of this one.
Okay, nobody can get out of this one. That's the way for every car sometimes. We now have the perfect American family going here. And the kids are growing and everything's fine, you know. Father keeps getting raises and moving up the ladder, right? Father and the kids are all passing in school and they're getting merit badges and brownie points or whatever it is you get. Everything's going fine, everything's beautiful. And about that time, Grandpa dies and along comes Grandma to live. Now, whose grandma shall it be? I mean, whose mother? Shall it be yours or his? We need to determine that. Who's going to join this family now?
All right. Okay. That's the hardest.
Got a theory. Father's mother is coming to live with the family. Who wants to play that part? Nobody wants to be the mother-in-law, so I'll take somebody who clearly isn't hosting. Do you want to join us? What are we going to do with mother-in-law? How are we going to do that?
For natural life, she's going to hang on the sun.
Oh, okay.
Sit on their hands.
That really put a strain on mother over here. Hey, that's beautiful. Isn't that what often happens? Isn't that exactly what often happens? Take care, mother-in-law. We've got more work for you to do. The parent comes in, hooks on to his or her child, and pulls the other one all out of shape. Huh? What's happened? There's another thing that happens very often with when a parent comes to join the family. Because of the difficulties involved, get out there again and we'll have her join in a different way. A typical way. Come with me. Here's the way she joins. She just starts going in orbit around the whole business. Never really joins up. Just keeps going around. Never really gets in on anything. Just keeps going around. Feel dumb, I'm sorry. Just keeps going around. The family stays there. Everything's fine. Grandma has her own room. She goes to it a lot. That's where she spends most of her time. She just keeps going around. Never joins up. Okay. What's wrong with that? What's that going to do to Grandma?
You're busy.
It's probably going to make life very uncomfortable for her. All these people in here are going to feel uncomfortable about it, but not nearly as much as she is, because she's not a part of things. She's used to being a part of things, but she's not a part of this thing. She's like living in a motel attached to the house. Temporary. She never joins up. Is there a way we can really get her into this thing without hooking her on his back? How would you do it?
Cut up in pieces. Put her in there, see what happens.
Okay. There's a good experiment. Grandma has joined up. She's become a part of this family. Still feel out of it? Feel new, but not out of it.
Right.
Okay. We got a good thing going. See if you can get the toes a little close together. I don't think you're trusting or risking very much here. There we are. Now we got a nice family going again. There's interdependence. Everything's working fine. Time for this kid to go away to college, I think. Come on, go away to college.
Concordia, right?
Let go.
Let go?
Just get out of there any way you can. You're going to college. What had to happen? I had to catch him, and they had to kind of bounce around for a little bit. What happens, however, when it's time for him to go away to college? What do people say? Oh, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it fine and grand? He got that football school. Well, maybe not. He got that tennis scholarship, and everything's paid for, and they're patting the old man on the back and saying, wow, chip off the old block, you know. He's going to make a great estate, or wherever he went. What's happened to the family, however? The family is really in trouble, isn't it? It's wobbling around. How about the kid?
Old.
Yeah, everybody is saying to him, isn't it wonderful? You know, there he is. Wow, the good life is really going to start for him now. You know, it's girls and beer parties. Did you do that at college?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about that, you know, because I don't know what I was talking about. I really wanted my independence, you know.
Okay. Sometimes that's the way
it
is.
Yeah, but then after you got there, you
know, well, you...
But still, it was still the thing that, you know, you go away to the big city where not everybody knows what you're doing.
Right. Right.
You some have advantages.
Some advantages, definitely. But the point I'd like you to see is that when you hook on or hook off from this family thing, it shakes up the whole mix and it shakes up you. It's a change. It's a change that's going to cause some difficulty, maybe. It's a change to which you may be having some adjustment necessary. Fine, he left rather abruptly. Now let's put him back in the family again. He's home for the summer. And Grandma, you're getting rather old. Everybody knows that. And Grandma just came back from the doctor, and the doctor said that Grandma's got about 6 months to live. What would you begin to do as a family if you know that? Grandma's from here on. She's been a part of the family now. What do you start to do? Find better ways to hang on to her? They're supporting her. Is that easier now to let her go? Will it shake up the family less? It might. Huh? The family knows what's happening. They're aware of what's happening. Then one day Grandma dies and is gone. Come on, Grandma. Grandma got out easy. And they're putting the family back together. Even though they knew it was happening, she was really a part of that family. To lose somebody from the family means the whole family's going to rock around. Okay. All right, so much for that. Thank you very much. What you've seen... How are we doing on time? Anybody know what time it is? Okay. What you've seen is one kind of change that occurs in family. Well, two kinds of change that occur in families. Adding and subtracting people. What you've seen is what that does to the interdependence that we strive for in family living. You've got some ideas, maybe, about how families are structured. It's possible to structure them in such a way that there's not much interdependence. I hear about that once in a while in my work. I hear about families where there is very little interdependence, where father and mother, for example, are described as two people who kind of live in the same house. They really don't do much together. They don't count on each other. They have a very independent kind of style. They probably have closer relationships outside the house than they have within the house. Closer friends. Not necessarily hanky-panky friends, but they have closer human relationships with people outside the family. That's one way to do it. You might choose to do it that way. I think optimal family is one that has a great deal of interdependence. That sets you up to hurt sometimes when the interdependence gets disrupted by somebody leaving and going away to school, by somebody leaving and going away to live somewhere else, by somebody getting married and pulling out of the family. So adding and subtracting, for whatever reason, is going to cause some disruption in the interdependence that's there. Sometimes the social signals are right. When Grandma died, what would everybody say to the family? Oh, we sympathize with you. That's a sad time. She was a great old gal. Yeah, she really did a lot around here. Those kinds of sentences are said, which indicate that people are feeling with you. What's your feeling? What's your feeling as a family up here is loss and grief and sadness, possibly some relief if there had been a lot of burden of caring for her. That burden is now gone and some relief, and you would feel a little bad about feeling relief maybe. But at least the social signals that come to you are appropriate. They anticipate your sadness and your being discombobulated. But when a baby is born, or a kid comes home from the service, or a kid goes off to college, or some of those kinds of addings and subtractings, the social signals are often about 100% wrong, 180 degrees out of phase. They're just upside down from where they ought to be. That causes people some difficulty. They say, you know, when everybody's clapping father on the back because the kid got the scholarship and is going off to college and isn't it wonderful and isn't it grand, and father is feeling, how come I'm not rejoicing like I ought to be? That causes people some difficulty. They say, you know, when everybody's clapping father on the back because the kid got the scholarship and is going off to college and isn't it wonderful and isn't it grand, and father is feeling, how come I'm not rejoicing like I ought to be? You know, I'm missing my kid, who was fun to have around, you know, a good person. He washed the car once in a while. He even cut the grass on occasion. Ben isn't here, is he? There he is. So, there's another kind of change that goes on in families, and it goes on, it's a little more difficult to see, it's subtler. It has to do with growth. We hooked on for a first child, you know, a pretty full-size one. That's not the way they usually come, right? They usually come a lot smaller and a lot more helpless, but they do pull some weight. Very quickly you'll notice that the infant is a part of the interdependence that's going in that group. But he doesn't stay an infant. He changes, he grows, he gets bigger, his whole role changes. Imagine, if you can, if we could, you know, if I was good at animation, I could probably do this in a cartoon, but I'm not. If you could imagine our first child coming here, you know, about that big, and then growing, just imagine what that would have done to the interdependence we had demonstrated here between the parents. They would have had to be shifting around, you know, as he went from 7.5 pounds to 160, they would have had to be shifting their weight, and his hands went from, you know, about that big to that big, they would have had to be shifting their fingers. Things would have been changing while this change was going on. The growth of children is again a rather evident kind of change that happens within family life, because you can see them grow. You know, when aunt and uncle come next month, they're going to say, wow, are you ever big, or something like that. Boy, did you go up a lot. You can see that sort of change. When they come to us 7.5 pounds, they can't even move themselves around very well. In fact, there's very little they can do, and after a few years, there's very little they can't do. That change is evident. There are other changes, however, which are not so evident. There's a, because I've been through it myself and watched a lot of other people go through it, there's a syndrome I'm calling the recycled marriage syndrome that amounts to a change in a marital relationship from one that was pretty much dependence to one that has become interdependence. What changed initially was this lady. She went from being, you know, my wife, the washer of my clothes, the bearer of my children, the doer of my dishes, the cleaner of my house. She went from being that to being a much more independent person, a much more full person. She went to being an administrator at a seminary, of all things, who has all kinds of responsibility and interests and does all kinds of things, and is not just, you know, kind of hanging on me, waiting for me to make a move so she'll know how to follow. She is not in orbit about me as she once was when we first married. This kind of change is not always so evident. It causes some real disruption in the interdependence that had been established. We had it pretty much like this. I think we now got it like this. Those kinds of changes frequently occur because one party makes them. I didn't always like that when she was doing all that. I didn't like being told it was my turn to do the dishes. I said, you know, that's not what my father ever heard from anybody. That's not fair. Those are not the rules we started with, right? I didn't say all those nasty things to you. I just didn't do the dishes. But those kinds of changes, when one party changes, or some of the changes that are going to occur anyhow, the young professional or the young businessman or the young tradesman is going to be a different guy when he's 20 than he is when he's 40. He's going to have different responsibilities, a different understanding of himself. His wife is doing the same kind of change number, and all that has to be taken into account in terms of the interdependence they have established. So here's how it all comes together. What starts the family is two people, and what really gets it rolling is the covenant they make with each other. The covenant is to build their lives together, to share life together. I can't think of a better way to say it, really. That's the covenant. That's the foundational part. We generally do that at a wedding ceremony, don't we? That's where the covenant gets said. The vows get taken. In the old days, it used to be love, honor, and cherish. Sometimes love, honor, cherish, and occasionally obey. We're that old. But what's happening there is the covenant is being laid down. That's going to be solid. That's not going to change. What we're deciding to do is to establish an interdependence between two people. They are agreeing to do that. But with all this change that's going to go on, as people are added and subtracted, as the principal parties in the covenant change themselves, something else has to change too. What changes is the contract that exists between them. The contract has got a lot of fine print in it, you know, and sometimes it gets erased and started over. Contract has to do with roles, with tasks, with functions, with attitudes, with whatever. Contract has an awful lot to do with how you communicate with each other. And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. I see some advantages that Christian people have when it comes to establishing an interdependence between them, it comes to establishing a family that will be truly interdependent. One advantage that's easy to get hold of is they have something else to share, something very important and central in their lives. They have Christ to share. A second advantage that they have, and I see this rather often as a counselor. If you got two people who are professing commitment to Christ and the Christian way, and they seem to have differences with each other that are deep and abiding and causing all kinds of friction, I feel as a counselor I got something going for me right there that I don't have if they're not Christian people. What I got going for me is these Christian people have an understanding of forgiveness. It's not an idea I got to sell them from ground zero. It's an idea they live with. They live with the notion of forgiveness. more than the notion. They live with the fact of forgiveness by God in their lives. They are people who know how to say, I confess. They know how to ask for forgiveness of God. They maybe need to learn how to ask that forgiveness of each other, because that can leave an awful lot of junk in the back closet that you don't have to look at anymore if you got forgiveness. So there's two advantages that Christian people have in establishing a genuine interdependent family. Now, I've talked about long enough. Anybody got anything they want to say to me or to the group?
How do you address the alternative family relationships that are now being explored, such as the alternative is sexually used, but homosexuals who say that they can make this kind of interdependent relationship, or the lesbians who live together and even with children are addressing that kind of interdependence?
Okay. I think it's possible. I haven't seen much of it. That what I'm saying, let me clarify that. Theoretically, it sounds possible. It has some additional hazards to it, I think, because of where our society is in terms of this. Society sanctions marriage. Society is beginning not to sanction, but to, I think in general, but to permit unmarried people to live together. That's not very strong sanctioning in that direction, approval of that sort of behavior. There's a lot of disapproval, a lot of scowling and so forth going on. I think that puts an additional burden on the living together without marriage. Another problem with living together without marriage is people have to constantly calibrate their commitment to each other. Wow, is that ever since? What I mean is, when you're married, you have this covenantal relationship, which is total and permanent. That's its intent, right? If you're living together without that, you don't have that. Consequently, you got something else you got to watch all the time. Namely, that you not get more committed than your partner, because that leaves you vulnerable. I've worked closely with some people who were trying to live that way, and this is what comes out to me again and again. This is where their problem is. They have to constantly be ready to bail out. And that really affects the kind of relationship they can establish. As far as homosexual or lesbian people establishing interdependence, I believe they fully can. I've not seen it much. Which is to say, I don't believe it happens very often that a genuine, stable, enduring relationship is built this way.
Okay, well, going back to your,
you ask a big question, I give a big answer.
Yeah, of the Genesis story, a man was made for a woman. That, or a woman was made for a man.
Made for each other.
Yeah. Is that something that conflicts with the idea of the sexuality business?
I think so. That's my reading of it, yes. Put it this way, the ideal relation, the God-intended relationship, is between a man and a woman. That's what God had in mind, I think. Now, that doesn't always work, does it? We know that. And we know that there are some people who have minimal or no sexual attraction to members of the opposite sex. That happens. I think that's unfortunate. I don't know why it happens. Nobody really has very good answers as to why that happens. Some theories around. I don't think that's what God had in mind. I think if people like that choose to live their life in a homosexual or a lesbian way, I can't be highly critical of that, because they don't have other choices. Okay? You get us into a real quagmire here. I don't know where the rest of the group is.
The difference in hardly much the same than a person without sexual attraction isn't much different than a person who's born retarded. They both have this problem, which is not in the norm.
Okay, and as with the retarded person, need to be regarded by the rest of us as a person. Huh? Yeah. That's where the trouble comes, though, because we don't. Right?
Yeah.
We regard retarded people as inferior, if not worse than inferior, as non-persons. And the same depersonalizing that our society thrusts on certain conditions of humans. How do you regard a schizophrenic? How do you regard someone who's not congenitally retarded but seriously brain damaged? This is one of the major flaws in our society, I think. We depersonalize those people. In fact, in the Bible class yesterday afternoon, I think we got very close to saying some of the same things in terms of how we regard people with other religious practices, not a different faith, but a different practice. This is how we human beings respond to difference. If you're not like me, you can't possibly be as good as me. Therefore, I don't have to treat you as a human being, as a person. I can treat you as an object.
At the University of Minnesota, that human sexuality, they have a week program which the seminary is involved in, some high criticism over it, but what it really points out, I think deeply, is this whole idea of personhood that we did mention yesterday in Bible study, and the fact that people who are crippled have sexuality, people that have amputated arms or legs, people with epilepsy, whatever the case, that in old age, you know, does sex stop at age 50 or 40 or 30?
Okay, I hope not.
Sometimes I wonder. We only go by the norms. We may find ourselves in quite a bit of denial of who we are as persons, you know, whatever condition we find ourselves.
But they're artificial norms.
Yeah.
They are norms that we impose. They are not norms that need to be there. Isn't that the case?
And that's what I think they try to bring out in this week of seminars.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be one different. I would agree with everything you said. I think there's one thing more that needs to be said in terms of homosexual behavior that I see as not, and I see that as sin, which is different than I see the homosexual as a person, just as a retarded as a person. But when we're dealing with retarded in his behavior, we're not dealing with the question of sin. And so that's another added question. I mean, greed is a sin and all that, but when I converse with the gay community, it's different. If you communicate with a person who is greedy, he's not maintaining that behavior is legitimate, or the gay community is maintaining that homosexual behavior is legitimate and that lifestyle is legitimate, and I would say scripturally I disagree with that.
And there probably are some people in the room who would agree with you and some who would not, right? This is a contested area right now. Some churches have made statements countering that, some denominations, and some haven't. And some churches have made statements, whole denominations, supporting that sort of thought.
But it's another issue that's part of homosexuality that isn't accepting another kind of stereotype. You know, we have other stereotypes of persons.
Mm-hmm.
And
the question of sin or is not part of that.
Yeah, I agree.
In going back on this homosexual thing, back to the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, I think when Morton appear, I think it would be a fact that if this is accepted within a society, it spreads like a disease, thus within a community, if you accept it rather than strive to understand it. Because back in those cities, it was practiced by the majority of the society themselves. And certainly, in God's view, he saw fit that the entire community, or I shouldn't say entire, but virtually all the community had to be destroyed because of what they have allowed to go on. And I think in looking at this homosexual thing, I think certainly we have to understand it, but we have to, I think, be careful of our any degree of acceptance of it, so that we don't promote the problem. If you want to consider it a problem, I do, because like him, I consider it a sin, and I think the Bible has spelled this out, and I say I think we have to understand it definitely, but in acceptance, I think we got to be very cautious on the approach to it.
Mm-hmm. Anita Bryant did get her vote down in Florida, you know, mm-hmm. Dade County, 2-1.
I'd say that a short definition of the approach is acceptance of the person, the loving confrontation of what of the behavior is, as I understand it, so that I can accept that person, and individually I would relate to that person, not as a group, but as an individual, and pastorally I think my ministry would be loving confrontation, but still acceptance of that person.
I think that in regards to that, we oftentimes, like in dealing with criminal acts and everything within our society, so many people look at the dealing with the individual with the idea of revenge rather than trying to help the individual. And I think that in the case of the homosexual, we got to get this idea of revenge because he's doing something that we dislike, rather we should look at it as trying to help him, just like we would someone that was a thief or a murderer or anything else. And when you look at administering love, like the Good Samaritan, when he came along the road and found the person that had been beaten by robbers, he didn't necessarily like what he saw. And we don't have to like what we see either in a homosexual, but we have to understanding him and then try to help him to do what's right in relationship to what we understand, what God has told us.
To care for the person.
Bible study when we talked about religious differences, and we said that, you know, or I said, I don't know if anyone agreed, but I think some did, that it's too easy to get into a we-they kind of thing. There's some group out there somewhere, and I say, well, they are thus and so, and we are so and so, or I am, and so then I'm relating over and against them, you know, and I hear that happening here too. In a way, there is the human community with all this going on, and if all of you become they to me, for whatever reason, then there's no, it can't go any further than that. I may want to help you all, even if you are a they, but I can't help you as long as you're they and I'm me. Or if there's two or three of us, then you're they and we're we, and you know, we can't help you because you're somebody else. I think if instead of talking about a sin, you know, as some kind of a legal definition, we can talk about sin as our condition, then we can talk with each other. because we're in exactly the same boat. And you can help me, even though maybe I think you're wrong about some things, you can still help me.
It's not the sinless ones talking to the sinners.
Yeah.
It's one sinner talking to another. It is a we kind of operation. As soon as you begin saying they, you've drawn a boundary. Good. Verlon.
About the marriage thing, in America, it's become our luxury to be able to afford more things. You know, like when a person gets a certain age in a family, he can afford, since he's worked and everything, he can afford to buy a car, or he can afford to get his garage fixed up or something, or his own central room, things like that. And those kind of things tend to set the family, make the family more independent of each other. And how would a family handle that? I mean, what could be done to maybe bring a little more interdependence into the family after something like that occurred?
I didn't tell Verlon to ask that question, but it's beautiful, because that's what I'm going to talk about on Tuesday. How old are your kids, Verlon? I'd rather not enter into it. If you miss Tuesday, I'll come and have a talk with you, all right? I think we're out of time. Appreciate the response this morning. Tomorrow we'll talk about communication, and Tuesday we'll talk about parent-child. And from some of the comments here, I'm feeling some interest in a fourth session on sexuality. That's what I had in mind for session four, if we do session four. I'm not committed to it yet. I'm just thinking that there seems to be interest and we seem to be able to talk about it. So, thank you all.